Zaxby's Sensation Salad is so much more than a plain old salad. It's a salad. Which begs the question, at what point does a salad stop being a salad and become a salad? Is it when you add Zaxby's fried chicken to it? Crunchy wontons? Asian slaw? Citrus vinaigrette? Teriyaki glaze? Sweet and spicy sauce? Or is it when you top it all with a handmade perfectly fried egg roll? Without a doubt, the egg roll. The Sensation Salad. Only at Zaxby's.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices. Plus, extra ways to save. Like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. And up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the No Bad Dogs podcast. This is an excellent podcast working on two main things, resource guarding and stopping your dog from barking at guests when they come over. Two things that a lot of people have a hard time with. I hope you guys enjoy this podcast. Just as a quick reminder, we have a newly remodeled members club into the Tom Davis Online Academy, where I go live every single week answering your dog training questions, and you get the entire library of all of the dog training videos that I've done over the years that you see on YouTube, but they're uncut. They're over an hour. It's a great opportunity to work and see dogs in real time and take your notes at the convenience of your own home. You also get access to my personal dog trainers at the Upstate Canine Academy to ask them questions in real time as you're working on things. And we're going to go live once a month at the Upstate Canine Academy working on a different behavior, and we're going to do a Q&A after. So the Tom Davis Online Academy is now launched. Link in the description below. Thank you guys so much for listening. Enjoy the podcast.
Hi.
So what's going on?
Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
I've followed you on a lot of your videos. So we have two purebred Australian shepherds. Ashton, the older one, will be three. And the younger one, Riley, who is who we're having issues with, will be two in March. Okay. Sometime around, I think, year and a few months, she started attacking Ashton, the older one.
So Riley's a female?
Yep, they're both females.
Okay. Got it. You had them since puppies, and Riley is now starting to go after Ashton, the other dog?
Yes.
Okay.
Go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
So there have been multiple times when I've noticed that it's been around either food or treats.
Okay.
There have been other times where I haven't been able to pinpoint what the issue might have been.
Is it ever you guys at all? Like, do you ever feel like they're protecting you or resource guarding you?
I don't think so.
Okay. So could you guesstimate like how many times that they've had an a tiff?
Two, three, four. I think three or four.
Okay.
Two times have resulted in blood and injuries.
Okay. So go through the context. So when you say it's like food or toys, what is that? So the two times, like, let's just say the two worst times, like, what was that about? So is there just food laying around, toys laying around? Like, how does that work?
So the most recent time was Christmas. We had family over. We were doing presents, opening presents, and they happened to be bones. We were making them there and wait. And then we would give them their presents so they could open. Do you want me to?
No. I was just seeing if you were flipped. I'm just making sure.
Good. Okay. So we were asking them to open the presents. And I think for the next present, Ashton just went for a bone. And she lunged over at her. And I mean, it is extreme aggressive, full adrenaline to the point where if we're not careful when pulling Riley off, she will snap back at us.
Okay.
And there's been a period where if I've been home without my husband, I've had to make sure with all my strength and just put her in the crate because I just can't handle her. She's at 60 pounds. She's a very large and stocky female.
Yep.
Ashton is a little more daintier.
Okay. So would you say that's the main concern that you want to talk about?
I'd say that's the main concern. I think the only other issue we've had with her is she's aggressive with people that come over. I guess.
Riley is?
Yes, showing up at the house. Ashton is a full-on dream. Although she may jump on you, she literally loves everybody mm-hmm. to the point of, like, you could probably pick her up and take her as a stranger. Riley, on the other hand, barks when people come to the door, if she hasn't seen them in a really long time.
Okay. She barks, she's reactive. Is she aggressive towards them? Is she trying to bite them, or is she just reactive?
Just reactive.
Okay.
Yeah. Usually
just a lot of barking.
Cowards. Like if somebody would come towards her, she would cower back and come to one of us.
Okay. I mean, okay. Okay. So we'll talk about the resource guarding first, because it sounds like the biggest thing. So dogs can develop resource guarding with maturity. So that's usually the answer to all of a sudden or out of nowhere, or why is this happening when it wasn't? And a lot of times that's just maturity. That's where these things pop up. So it's not that you guys have done anything necessarily wrong. It's the dog's now an adult, and is it going to act different? And that's really the lamest term to put it, just like with humans. The older that we get, the interest and our concerns are different, and they change. Our priorities change. So resource guarding is one of those things that you typically can't stop. Like you can't delete it. You can't make it go away necessarily. I shouldn't say you can't. You can. It's just not likely that it is. Resource guarding tends to be a very ingrained, primal, instinctual behavior that a lot of animals have, specifically carnivores who really have the canines that can fight for, you know, other things. So you could go down the route of trying to desensitize the resource guarding with bones and things like that. But really what you'll end up doing is you'll likely just create more of a bad relationship between the two dogs. And that's not what you want, because essentially what you'd have to do is you'd have to get the high value food out. You'd get the other dog out and you'd start working around this thing. Could you do it? Yes. The success rate is not guaranteed, just because, again, we can't delete. It's like a dog that loves the water. Like they love swimming. It's their favorite thing in the whole world. Whatever. You can pick anything, but that's their favorite thing. Always has been, always will be. That's their thing as a dog. I love swimming. You could work around the ponds. You can work around the lakes. You can work around the big puddles in the neighborhood, but you're not going to be able to change the way the dog wants to do the puddle or wants to do the lake or whatever, wants to get in water. You can, again, desensitize it to say, hey, it's appearing a lot more often, so it may lose its value. Also, we're going to use obedience to counter your innate intuition to want to jump into water. But same thing with resource guarding. The dog may continually be like, no, like that's my freaking bone. That's my toy. I'm going to try to have your face if you take it. And so a lot of times that requires a considerable amount of time, and typically in my experience it requires some sort of professional guidance. And I don't try to really steer people down that path, because it's, even at the end of the day, if you do all the stressful things to get the dogs together and basically set the other dog up for failure, there's not the chances of the dog just going, oh, okay, never mind, I don't care, is not likely. So I typically don't go down that road. What I do talk about is understanding, again, like the Labrador who wants to go into the water, is there's certain things that dogs are going to want to do. And in the beginning of the dog's life, of course, you have an option to work on it. Like I do with my Mastiff right now. Like when I feed him, my other dog goes up to the crate. I'm petting him as he's eating. I'm taking his food away. There's things that you can do to decrease the likelihood of the dog becoming having resource guarding, but a lot of times I find that it's a genetic disposition that's already baked into the dog, and then it comes out when they're mature. So that's kind of the history on resource guarding. And obviously, you know, just to say it, is the resource guarding is something high value. So the dogs as animals are, there's something high value on the table, and if I don't go and get it, the other dog will. And if the other dog goes and gets it, I'll fight the other dog away from it. And then I get it. That's how animals interact. That's like it's so natural for them to do. The problem is obviously we don't want the dogs to fight. We don't want the other dog to get hurt. We don't want to ruin Christmas. We don't want vet bills. We don't want to be stepping on eggshells in our house. Like there's a lot of reasons why it sucks. But at the same time, for me, it's really easy to go, well, this is how, like, I mean, if you watched Animals in the Wild, that's exactly how it works. Like, you know, for a very basic generic observation and analogies, like you see a lion get a zebra and then all these other animals come out and they protect it. Super natural, right? So the best thing to do is to minimize or completely delete the resource. That is the safest way, easiest way to stop resource guarding. If at any point in my life with my dogs, if there was resource guarding in my house, which there never has been, knock on wood, everything of value would come up. The chew toys, tell all my family, no bones, no stuffies. Well, they like them. I don't give a shit. You come break up a fight then, you know? So that for me, that's like an automatic non-negotiable, everything is lifted. Because to have those things laying around is really like fluff. You know, it's just extra. It's not needed. It is nice to have, especially if you have a dog that likes to chew and work on things, for them to do that. But they're only going to be doing that in their crate if they have an issue. So sometimes dog owners are like, they can't emotionally like not give their dog stuff to do, work on and chew on and bones. And I'm like, okay, fine. If you have to do it, then do it in their crate. Do it in the laundry room. Do it in places where the dog can be isolated, where the other dog can't come in unexpectedly. Hey, what do you got? Bam, they get attacked. And it's like, holy crap, now you're breaking up a dog fight that you created. And I know it's the same thing with Christmas, is obviously, without saying, but it's like you didn't want that to happen, you didn't expect it to happen. But at the same time, it's like most of the resource guarding cases that I deal with are just like this, is the owners put it on the table, figuratively speaking, and boom, it happens. And I'm like, well, not for nothing, but you know, you basically like enabled this situation to happen. And again, I have friends, I have colleagues, even I myself can give my dogs bones, and I still have to be mindful that they're animals, right? So even when I feed my personal dogs, they're fed in crates. It's just, I'm just not naive to animal behavior. So resource guarding, again, the absolute easiest, safest, lowest hanging fruit is to go, okay, we have to eliminate all of those high resources. And oftentimes when dog owners approach me with these cases, is they're great 99.9% of the time. The only time that they have tiffs is if those high values are out. And I'm like, well, so what you're saying is your dogs are just about perfect except for this one thing. Can you just delete this one thing? And I was like, yeah, I guess I could. And it's like, okay, there's a good chance that now you'll never see it again. That's why I asked you about the resource guarding to you, because sometimes that can transfer to you where they're now doing it for attention for mom and dad, or doing it for the couch or the bed. But if it's like, this is like the most basic, like level resource guarding that you can get, which is, it's kind of a loaded thing to say, but it's the best type of resource guarding you're going to have, because it's not unrealistic. When dogs are like resource guarding a couch, it's like, okay, this is not really that normal. But when you give two dogs juicy bones right next to each other in the same room, it's like you have two animals that don't get this often with all of this excitement. And we basically bring them up to like level 100 and expect them to just be. And again, like if I gave my dog a bone, they would likely take one, and then one would go to the other end of the house, and then that would be it. And I would, it wouldn't, you know, so I'm not blaming you or anything. And I'm not saying it's your fault. It's just, you know, if you have a dog that has a history of having resource guarding issues, that's going to happen. So, yeah.
So I think initially, so when she was brought home as a puppy, there were some signs that I saw about food, like her food specifically, which, and you're saying you can't really train it out of them. I thought I was able to nip it in the bud, and I started hand feeding her. Like,
yep,
that's what I did for quite some time. And then we didn't have any issues. And then my mom decided to bring pig ears.
Yep.
The first time we had them, that was actually the first instance that we saw that. So we completely eliminated. I eliminated them. I said, you're not allowed to have them anymore. That's it. We typically have Benevones around. But they're around the house. There are multiples of them. Everybody has, they either have two or three, many of them. And so it wasn't like a juicy meat bone. It was a Benevone that we were giving for the gifts. Now, the only other thing I can think of is it's a possibility that they hadn't gotten fed yet prior to that. And so the other time, just the other day, I had food out and I was getting ready to feed them, and we had just gotten a bigger scale to weigh them for their food. So I'd previously had Riley trying to get on the scale with little teeny treats, nothing new, but the food was sitting on the counter, like just out in the open. And I brought Ashton in from outside and went to do the same thing. I had her right there. Riley was right beside me, and I'm thinking she was close enough to the food that she attacked her right there as I was doing the same thing as I did for Riley and just trying to coax her to go onto the scale.
Yeah.
So the first instance of the resource guarding with the actual good juicy bones, that was completely eliminated. Like, those bones, we no longer feed them. Because I said, if somebody's going to have an issue,
right,
we're not gonna. And I don't think that it's like they both get their food. I guess my frustration is, so why are you resource guarding something there's plenty of, and each of you have one of them?
Yeah.
Like, so I know that as far as being bred in, we did have a lot of problems with Riley's breeder. She's not the same breeder as Ashton's breeder. We wanted a tail, so we met somebody from, I think, Michigan or something, and drove the whole way out to Ohio and got her from there. But we had a really big issue with that person that met us. It, just problems in general. I will never buy a dog where I can't go and actually see them and their place in their house, and I won't ever do that again.
Yeah. It just sounds like, and I understand what you're saying. It's like they both had one, they've already had, I just think it's like the energy in the room, right? Where it's like little kids, it's like, you guys got this. Cool. And they're like, oh, yeah. You know, and it's just like this.
There were a lot of people here.
Yeah.
There was a one, so.
Yeah. It's like this overstimulating thing, you know, that happens. So I would just say this, guys. You do have options, you know, so I'm not saying you can't desensitize it or you can't delete it. It's likely not going to happen at this age, especially if you saw it early on and then it came back out. So it's up to you, because it doesn't sound like it's consistent, because my house is the same way. I have the same exact bones laying around for my 1-year-old dog to save my furniture. So like, but my other dog could care. I couldn't force her to chew one of those fake bones, you know, if I wanted to, you know what I mean? So there's never any conflict with that. So I think it's, so, you know, this whole conversation is a consulting conversation to say, hey, what do you think? What should we do? And I think that it's entirely up to you on how you move forward with it, because obviously there's definitely circumstances which the dogs could care less about each other. If the bones are out and they're working on them and you're fine, there's a couple things to be mindful of. Is if the stimulation in the environment is high, then the dog will rise with that, especially Aussies. They're an easy dog to rile up, it seems. And then I would also say, as the dog is maturing, so as Riley is maturing into a more protective dog, like, that also could be a thing. So yes, it could have been the stimulation, the excitement on Christmas, but also paired with now this is coming out again. So it's really I don't know the answer, because you would only have to trial to see like what is working. And so my suggestion for you would be to be very mindful of when you do give the dogs bones, or if there is going to be lots of stimulation, maybe you pull the things to be protective over up, or just separate them. Because also I've seen dogs who sometimes it's not as much of resource guarding as it is overstimulation and redirection. So let's say they each get a Benabone right now when you guys are chilling, right? And they're like, oh cool, one goes over there, the other one goes over there, they work on them, and that's it, that's the normal thing that happens. But then let's say same thing, but we have 7 family members in the house all congregating, talking, hanging out, laughing, moving, cooking, and then there's an incident. And so that it is more of a form of redirection than it is resource guarding, because the dog's like here. And it happens often when we see dogs like go through thresholds where they're like opening a door and we're getting the dogs amped up. People like to get their dogs like, we're going to go for a walk, are you excited? And they're bouncing up and down and they just redirect on the other dog. And so it's not like a resource guarding of the door, it's actually overstimulation. And so your job is to analyze and isolate, is it more of the redirection because of the stimulation, or is it more of resource guarding? And it could be simply a combination of both. But I'm just saying, like, as you guys move forward with it, those are the two things I would really be working on. Is, well, that's weird, because let's say 3 months in a row they've had the same bones and they've been absolutely neutral, could care less, and then aunts, uncles, cousins, brothers and sisters come over and then there's an incident. So it could just be an over-arousal, over-stimulation thing, and the dog just peaks up and then takes it out on the other dog.
I wouldn't say that each dog gets their bones and then they go to their respective corner. I will say that Riley has always been, what's yours is mine. It doesn't matter if I have one or not. So because Ashton has it, she'll drop hers and go over and get Ashton's. And then the cycle or continue sometimes. Won't always be that, but that's a more common situation, I think, with a lot of things that they do. Play, you know, balls, tugs, you know, which I think could be another issue. If Riley is not being the one that's played with, then she acts like jealous.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So it sounds like you have to really audit your overall attention to them too. Like at the end of the day, if you can take out the thing that's making the dog have resource guarding issues, you're going to be successful. But I just don't see a lot of success with trying to like go the route of desensitization and stopping the build and correcting it if the dog reacts. I just find it way more successful and less stressful to, you know, cut your losses, where it's like, fine, like, you guys can't have these particular bones anymore or something like that.
What percentage or what's the possibility of removing the items that were essentially the resource guarding issue and then something else comes up to it, where it's something else.
Yeah. It could happen if the dog has serious resource guarding issues. I just don't think you'll see it under the context, because I think, okay, dogs who will switch from one item to the next to have resource guarding is really consistent, which means typically you would see resource guarding consistently currently every bone, every toy, every ball. That's the dog that if you're like, okay, items are gone, then it could turn into intention. Okay, no more attention when they're both around, and then it could turn into spaces in the house. That's like where it gets really severe, and dogs who typically go up and down that ladder are dogs that are very consistent with their resource guarding. Right now, what you're saying is they have balls, tugs, Benabones, and there's really no issues until there is. And so those are the situations that happen, is if you take something away and then it becomes something else, it's typically much more intense. It would be more intense now if that were to be the case, but it doesn't seem like that's it. It's not spaces. It's not attention. It's not, you know, mutual items between you guys, couches, doorways, things like that. It seems to be just things of high value. And also, do they do it over anything? So are they doing it over things only that, like the bones that they can actually chew on and feel like they can eat? Or is it play items as well, like the balls, the tugs, etc.?
I mean, Riley will go steal a toy, but I don't think she's ever growled or gotten aggressive over a toy.
Yeah, because that's just another factor into this, is if it's only happening with items that the dog feels like they can consume, then it's more of a resource guarding over like food value, where it's a lot more innate and primal, where it's like, this is my meal. When it's a bacon cheese flavored Benabone, and you're like, oh, it's just like really hard plastic, and they're like, well, it doesn't taste like that, so it's a cheese hockey puck, you know. So that's a different, that's again, it's another layer of resource guarding, where it's like, well, it's actually not happening with the balls or the tugs or, you know, all the other stuff. It's only happening with the Benabone, you know, the flavored Benabones or the items that the dog feels like at some point they can swallow it, which is the benefit of you. Like, that's literally what those bones are, is they make them really tasty. And the dog basically is like, well, this is too big to swallow, so I'm going to break this down so I can swallow it. And they never can. So that's what keeps them busy. Right. So that's kind of like the whole mentality, is if they're only doing it for those items, then again, you probably won't see it in other spaces if it's only under the consumables.
Yeah, I mean, there's never been attacking, but she, it always feels like she's jealous, or she will go up and steal the ball that Ashton has or something, you know, if she doesn't have it, but never attacking or growling or biting due to those things. Like, she'll do that for a person too, which I've told people to stop doing. So if we'll be petting Ashton, Riley will come over and be like, hey, don't pet her, pet me. Mm-hmm. And I've told everybody in the family, you need to push her away. She is not allowed to come in and force her petting when you are petting Ashton.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
never growling, biting due to any of those things.
Right. Because she probably just doesn't care about it enough. You know, she's like, I want this, but I'm not going to fight you over it. But then if you get like a cheese flavored bone, it's like, I'll fight you over this. Like, this is, you know what I mean? So that's just something to think about, okay, moving forward. And that's something that you guys, like, that's a roadmap for you guys to really audit and go, you know what? It really is only with the things that the dogs can chew on and it tastes good and they feel like they can eat it. Then that would be an easier solution to say, hey, no more of those bones. Or if they are those bones, then it's a supervised thing. But again, it's like, what's it worth? It's like, no, you know what? Let's just not, you know, like, let's just, if it were me and my dogs, I would just take him away. Yeah.
I think the reason we got him to begin with was Ashton decided to chew every piece of wood, yeah, but she never chewed her. but wood steps and like anything that she was, I guess, bored. Now I work from home, so I'm here all the time. I'm not paying attention to them all the time.
Right.
They're in there every so often, but I don't have constant time to play and, you know, do anything with them, especially when I'm working.
Yeah.
That was the main reason I started to get them. To be honest, I don't know if Riley has ever chewed anything or if we just had the bones because of Ashton. Yeah, I don't remember. Yeah.
No, I get it. It's the same thing for me. That's why I have them laying around. Is I'm like, no, this is what you chew on, not the chairs and not the...
Right. Yeah. Okay, so I guess can we discuss some of her other issues, I guess, with people and hacking. I mean, definitely Ashton never really barked at anything before Riley came around. So she seems more of the protective, but I also think that she's fearful of a lot of things. People in general, you know.
Yeah. So I would say when dogs are fearful or reactive, when people are coming into the house, then there's a couple options. It's a lot easier to desensitize people because you can control that variable. You can speak in English and say, hey, you know, it's not like you can say that to Ashton, where it's like, hey, we're going to set you up with Riley. Like, don't worry. We're not going to let her attack you. You know, it's like, so with people, it's a lot easier to desensitize the process, right? Where it's like, okay, so here's a couple options. And this is, you know, the beauty of dog training is typically it's a combination of things like any, you know, being a chef or a boxer or something. It's like you have a combination of things that you're going to do to be able to support your goals. And so I typically start off with two things. I start off with the desensitization and or the confidence building aspect, which is putting the dog on a leash and kind of drilling the scenario. So if you have opportunities to have people over to work on this, or if it's like, we don't have a lot of people over that often, but when they do come over, she definitely reacts, then you work on it then. But a lot of times what it is putting the dog on the leash, having everybody ignore her, and using positive reinforcement to encourage the dog to make, or actually pay the dog for making good decisions. So it would be collar and leash or a slip leash or something on the dog. Ding dong, knock on the, or you guys can do this even if it's just you guys, depending on the reaction. Again, it's one of those things that I tend not to tell people we need to stop the dog from barking when people are over, because that's why we have dogs. And again, it's a very natural and innate thing. Dogs are conditioned animals, which means when they hear the doorbell or they hear the knock, they know that somebody's on the other side. So in the first 10 times they hear it, they do nothing because that doesn't mean anything to them. But as soon as they hear something that then equals something, they go, oh, this means somebody's here. That's why like my Alexa will say, somebody's detected at your front. And now that's the new doorbell. And my dogs are like, somebody's here. So it's this whole thing, right? So again, I don't get upset if they bark. I just will tell them that they can't bark excessively because I'm typically like, yeah, who is here? Thank you for barking. That's why I have you. And as soon as I know who it is, I'm like, knock it off, you know, leave it. So I would put her on a leash, bring her up to greet the people, and just tell them to completely ignore her. And you do this enough times, then you'll build confidence. So my roadmap of building confidence with dogs is much like with people, is if they're afraid of something or insecure about something, you want to get them and invite them and encourage them around the thing that they're afraid of as often as you can, to reverse the roles. Every time I'm around new people, I'm fearful. Well, this time we're going to be around a new person and great things are going to happen. You're going to get paid with high value food. You could do the hand feeding process around people and really just kind of reverse the roles. Somebody's here, I'm fearful. Somebody's here, I get paid. So you just kind of reverse psychology and instead of being, oh shoot, somebody's here, what are we going to do? It's somebody's here, I'm licking my chops, right? It's a conditioned response. So that's a piece to this, right? It's not the thing, it's a piece to this. And then the other avenue, and in what I would personally do in conjunction with that, is I would just be kind of grinding out the little things we don't like. So we're on a leash, ding dong. We go up to the door. We're barking. We say, leave it, which is essentially disengage, stop barking. I correct you with the leash and the collar. The dog stops barking. I pay the dog. The person comes in. The dog doesn't bark. I pay the dog again. And or it's this loop. The dog does bark. We correct the dog and say, leave it. And eventually what you'll get in the outcome will be somebody will be here. The dog will bark once or twice. You say, leave it. The dog is then still suspicious, but isn't audibly barking. You pay the dog for making better decisions. The third option, and again, I typically will use these interchangeably, it will be using obedience, a send-away place for the obedience. So that means ding-dong, somebody's here. It would be, you could do both. Riley, Ashton, go to your place, stay, and then when the person comes in, you can break the dogs. Dogs who are typically fearful won't stop, or very suspicious, like my dog Lakota. She's a Dutch Shepherd. She's genuinely like very, very suspicious if somebody's here. So she will like freak. She'll like need to see them because she just is so protective, where if I put her into a place, there's a good chance she'll continue to bark, or at least like gruff, which again, you got to pick your battles. So those are like the three things that you can work on. Is you want to change the emotional response of the dog to say, hey, every single time somebody comes in, nothing bad happens. So you can build confidence that way, because she might go, oh my God, somebody's here, we're all going to die. And you do it 45 times in a month and nothing bad happens. And in fact, the dog just gets paid. You can start to reverse the roles there. That's the easiest thing to start doing. And in conjunction with that, I would just say, meaning if you walked up, somebody is at the door and your dog's habitually barking, it kind of defeats the purpose. You don't want to sit there and allow it to happen because nothing's changing. You would correct the dog with the leash or collar and say, stop barking. So you disrupt it. So the correction is to clarify and to teach, like, nope, that's inappropriate. Just like if a teacher said 1 + 1 = and we said 4, we'd say, nope, we're not going to agree and say, yeah, it's 4. Because then they're going to go their whole life thinking that 1 + 1 = 4, and that's your fault, right? So when the dog goes to the door and they're barking, your goal and your responsibility is to say, that's inappropriate, stop barking, leave it is leave it. And then the moment the dog stops barking, you pay the dog. And then again, in conjunction with that would be sending the dog away to a place, because all that frustration at the front door, because that's what it typically looks like. Somebody's at the front door. The dogs go there, they're barking, it's exciting, they're spinning, they're jumping, they're anxious, they're backing up, they're pitter-pattering on the floor. You know, you're trying to move them out of the way. Hold on 1 second, let me just, and you're doing all this stuff, you know? Yeah. And so that is the way to dismantle it. And I would be really focusing on the duration of the barks, not deleting the barks, and building confidence around the person coming over, instead of just telling them it's a mixture. You don't want to just say, don't bark. It's also like, this is actually, you know, when somebody comes over, it's a good experience.
Right. Yeah. I remember watching a video of yours that talked about your dog and barking and that she was protective, you know, and, but I just don't know that it's worked for me, to get them off or to get them to understand that, hey, you know, cause I've tried that, cause I'll go and purposely look and I'll be like, okay, what are you barking at?
Mm-hmm.
It's fine.
Yep.
Stop. And
have you corrected it?
Not with like a leash and a collar, probably, because they don't typically have them on.
Yeah.
In the
No, I get it. But that's so, where,
yeah,
that's a big step. That's a huge piece. Okay. It's like missing the flour, making pasta. You're like, I did everything else. I'm like, yeah, but you didn't do like the main thing. The main ingredient there is they're going, ah, somebody's here. What are we going to do? Like, you know, and you do it. Hey, you know, again, like that's what I do is I'm like, what are you? That's what I'm looking. I'm like, what are you barking at? I find it out. And then I'm like, okay, quit the crap. And then I correct them if they don't. So I have a leave it and then I correct them after. But if you're going to the door saying, who's here? Nobody's here. We're good. And they're continually barking. You're not going to be able to stop that. Like you're not going to be able to correct it. You're not going to be able to discourage it effectively. You're kind of just preaching to the choir there. Like they're like, yeah, now we're all barking together because you're yelling at them, telling them to stop.
Yeah. 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 So they do have a place. Ashton was trained probably a little more than Riley was.
Yeah.
But Ashton will listen most times. Riley, I've tried it lately and she just kind of stares at me. So I've tried to work on her place command and her knowing or acting like she knows what it is now. So,
yep.
But that, even with Ashton, like, she's just too, she loves people. So when you've got one bouncing up, jumping up and down and bouncing it, dude, I can't stop the other. Even if I would put him in a place, like, the energy is like,
yeah, no, I get it. That's, that kind of goes with having two dogs though. It's like, and you know, and it is what it is. It's like, you know, when dog owners are like, yeah, but one dog is listening, but the other's not. I'm like, well, that's just, you know, part of having two dogs, and it's, you know, completely up to you. I'm just saying, if you want to make that experience better, you're not likely going to tell the dog that they can't ever bark again and then go, okay, what you're going to do is you're going to do two things. You're going to build confidence so the dog's reaction isn't as, it should be more of a, when the person comes, they should be expecting food. Or on the other side of the coin is when you say leave it and the dog barks through it, like right now you haven't actually enforced that. You've just said stop and they're like, no. And you're like, stop again. You know, it doesn't, it's not in for, you know, it's like kids. It's like you tell them to do something. They're like, no. And you're like, okay. So then that, that information and that direction and that structure and that leadership skill from you is now really diluted because you said, do it. And they go, I know what you're asking. I'm just not going to do it. And then they're looking at you like, what are you going to do about it? And you're like, I'm just going to ask you again. And then at that, because Aussies are so smart, they're like, ah, gotcha. So we can still do it. And worst case scenario is you tell us stop, you know? So that is a big excuse me, missing piece into that. And to your point of not having the leash on, like that's why you practice this. You put the leash on and you say, hey, go around back, ring the doorbell, don't come in, and I'm just going to work on the barking. Go around back, you know, and you just, it's hard work. It's practice. It takes time to recondition this. You know, it's like, okay, now go ring the doorbell. Okay, now go and knock on the garage door, like whatever. And you just have to start proofing these concepts. And that's what I've done with a lot of my clients over the years when I used to do in-homes. That was like probably my number one call is like, I need to stop, you know. And all I would do is I'd say, okay, here's what I want you to do. For the next 2 weeks before I come, I want you to ring the doorbell as often as you can and then pay your dog. Like scatter feed, whatever. Or if somebody does come to the door, just throw a bunch of food on the ground. And so we're not rewarding the dog. We're conditioning the dog at that point where if somebody comes to the door, dogs are smart enough to go, where's the food? And they start running around looking for the food. And you're like, oh, this is great. So we've reconditioned the dog. And if you think about it, like, how does a dog know anything about a chip bag, right? Like before your dog... You crack open a thing of pretzels or chips or anything tasty that we like to eat late at night, you know, and dogs don't, they can smell it and they go, hey, that's interesting. But the moment you're like, hey, here's a tasty treat is the moment your dog will start begging. Like you've conditioned that noise means something really tasty. And
yeah.
So it's kind of the same principle.
Okay. So if we're paying them, like you said, somebody rings the doorbell or knocks on the door and just giving them food, even if they do bark. So is that not telling them that, yes, it's okay to bark? Or
you have to, there's a fine line. There's a fine line there that you have to pick. You have to pick your battles. In the beginning, it's going to be, it's a controlled thing. So you would, somebody would be at the front door, whoever it is, however you set that up, even if you did like on your phone, like on YouTube, like a fake doorbell or whatever. Yeah. And in the beginning, it's not going to be trying to stop the bark. In the beginning, we're trying to recondition, reestablish what this means. And so in the beginning, it would be like a clicker. When you clicker train a dog, it's classical marker training. So this sounds means that I'm going to get paid and it's connected to a behavior. You're telling the dog, yep, you've done it. So what you would do is you would ring whatever is going on and then you'd scatter feed. I wouldn't do this with Ashton in the picture at all because then you could get a fight, right? All you're trying to do is ring the doorbell, pay the dog, ring the doorbell, pay the dog. And you can do it in 5-minute increments. You don't have to make it a big deal. Go to the doorbell, ring it, pay the dog, hand feed, pay, ring, pay, ring, pay. So yes, absolutely you could also argue, well, the dog is barking and then they get paid. But the idea is you're trying to condition the dog almost ring, scatter feed, ring, scatter feed, ring, scatter feed, because the dog's not going to bark while they're eating. So I like scatter feeding the most. Like if you're sitting at your table, go knock on the door once every 30 seconds for the next 5 minutes, whatever, right? And all of a sudden, ring, scatter feed. You don't really do anything. You just ring, scatter feed. Couple pieces of kibble on the ground. Couple pieces of kibble on the ground. Dogs typically, when they hear it, they start looking for the food. And now you're starting to build confidence that this big scary thing doesn't mean what they think it means. And you're starting to deactivate the bark because the dog is looking for the food rather than wanting to bark. So there is a time and a place, like as a dog trainer, that you go, okay, this is counterintuitive. This isn't working. Where if the dog is barking every single time for a week and getting paid, then yes, you're probably going backwards. But it's an art form. You really have to pick and choose what's working and what's not.
Okay. Do you have anything else that you can think of that you want to ask about? So I've considered some of your trainings. I did think that Riley's issues were severe enough that we would need to send her to the 2-week board and train. Yeah. Just because, his schedule is just funny, but if we would do the 3-day, so we're in PA, we're not terribly far, but,
yep.
So my question is, do you think, obviously you're going to say that any type of training is beneficial. Riley only had in-house training from me, not to say that sometimes that's not good enough, but
yep.
I don't have enough time to spend with her, but she did not have any initial puppy training. Ashton, the only thing she had was a 1-week like basic puppy training, and her basic issues were that she just wanted to greet every single person and dog, and I had to like turn her away and focus her, to the treat. And she was upset because she couldn't meet anybody. But Riley is a separate issue. And I have a feeling if I would take her in personally, it would be she'd be scared of every person. And I don't know about every dog, but, barking and be something that I wouldn't be able to handle myself. So I guess I've considered either one of those. Can I ask a question about, so technically they are raw fed.
Yeah.
Is that something that your training facility would be able to accommodate, or when you do like giving them treats, is that an additional treat, or do you use them their food to do that when you're training?
Good question. So yes and yes. So for the board and train, we do have freezers for raw fed dogs because we get raw fed dogs often. So it's no different than bringing a bag of kibble for us anyway. It's just put it in the freezer. And some people who stay for longer periods of time, because our board and train will go all the way up to like 6 weeks, then they just ship their food there, which is common. So then the treats and whatever, like if you want us to use specific treats for a certain reason, like we have dogs who have food allergies, so their treats will be labeled and it'll be on the trainer's shelf in the middle of the room that they train in. So they just know like, hey, this dog can only get these treats. So it's really up to you. Typically, we'll just use our No Bad Dog Nubs treats, the beef liver treats, and just because we have thousands of them and we like to use them to train with. So it's really up to you. So if you came in and said, hey, I'd prefer to kibble train, or I'd prefer these treats, or I'd prefer whatever, then that's up to you.
Okay. Yeah. No, I only try and she does not have any food allergies. They don't have food allergies. I just would rather feed. That's the reason I feed raw, is because I don't like to feed kibble and the ingredients that are in it. So
yeah, yeah.
The treats, that would be the only reason, but I would just be able to forgo that in the essence of having her trained, if if I cared about something. Just like, I probably shouldn't say this, but you know, they do not probably have all of their updated shots every year because I'm also funny about vaccinations. But sure. That in the essence of having her be there at the training, she would be required to have all of those.
Yeah, so we
know, patients, so I it was just something for the better of her.
Yeah,
if I needed.
Yeah, so no, I'm with you on that. I don't love people pumping their dogs full of vaccines that they don't need, just like with humans. And so what we typically do is we just do titers for dogs. So a titer, are you familiar with that? Okay, so that's what you can do is like anytime that we or anywhere really, typically we'll accept a titer, and that's what we do. I'm like, go to the vet, get a titer, get the blood work. As long as the dog has the vaccine still in their system, then that's all we need to see.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's okay. That's good to hear.
Yeah. Yeah. We're you know, we believe the same stuff. Like it sounds like we're on the same boat. Like I really try to do as much as I can, you know, as organic as possible. And as you know, my dogs get vaccinated and then we titer, and some of my dogs will go 5 years without needing any vaccines or more just because, you know, but a lot of people will just do vaccines over and over again because their vet told them they had to, and they don't realize that they're tripling and quadrupling and, you know.
Well, I think the rabies is one thing that PA doesn't allow to, it does not matter. Like,
That's common. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, but other things like distemper, bordetella, things like that, those are things that we typically will titer for. And, you know, at the end of the day, it's also like, I don't know 100% for sure what our policies are because I, you know, my team does a lot of that, but there might also be other waivers to say like, hey, if you don't want to provide records, then, you know, here's a disclosure form.
Yeah, I remember reading it. There was something about it, but I thought there was at least a requirement, and I'm not sure if that was the rabies or what that was.
Yeah, it's probably like a state requirement of the rabies, which is interesting because, like, you know, rabies isn't super common thing, but.
Well, they try to push it around here. We're a little more rural. Area, we've got woods, we've got, you know, stray cats and all kinds of stuff. So the vets are like, well, if they're going to be outside at all, and I'm just like, listen, they're not going to come in contact with any of those things most likely here. They're on my property. But all right. So sending her to training is never going to fix a resource guarding issue, right?
Correct. A lot of times, like if somebody is like, hey, I want you guys to work on resource guarding on top of the other things, what we do is we really tell you, we work on it with the dog and we explore the source of it, how severe it is, what to do to be successful, and then transfer it over. Because a lot of those like behaviors are again, they're ingrained. So again, we get a lab in. That just sees water and jumps in. Like, we're going to work on impulse control. We're going to work on the obedience. We're going to make sure that if there's water present with this lab, they're not going to jump in. But it's up to you to make sure you go home and follow through. Because if you go home and your dog sees water and you're like, oh, they trained that out of him. Like, no, we didn't train him not to want to jump in water. We trained him to make sure that when we tell him to heal or leave it or come, that they do that. So we're just we're suppressing what they want to do to keep, you know, you safe, right? So the dog safe. So anyway, so yeah, so we wouldn't because even if, like, let's say first week we worked on it or whatever, right? Let's just say this, like, we worked on it and we corrected the behavior and then we didn't see it. The problem specifically in the context of you guys is it might just be with the dog's housemate. Right, which is not there, and it's also not in your house. So when people come in with resource guarding, we're like, we're not going to take your dog on the sole purpose of resource guarding because there's a lot of environmental factors that play into those types of behaviors that we may never see the resource guarding here, no matter if we have a fillet in front of the dog's face with 10 dogs around it, because it's not the housemate, it's not a sister, not her sister, and it's not your house. And so we'll never take a dog on those principles, but we will say, hey, we'll work on it and we'll we'll do the best we can and we'll give you the information that you need to be successful, but we may never see it here, which is very, very common in our facility.
Which, and I think I just watched somebody else's video about that to say that you have to take the items out of the equation completely and add whatever it is back in to see if, even though they're resource guarding, are they resource guarding because now they're human, now their owner is in the room, or right. Are they resource guarding now that the specific housemate dogger is in the room, that it, that those factors could play in.
It's an experiment. You have to go through all the variables to see. And that's what I try to tell people, is it's like an investigation. You're trying to isolate the trigger. Once you can isolate the trigger, it's like being successful on anything else. It's like, I know the formula. This plus this equals this. And same thing with problems. You're like, okay, every time I do this, this is what happens. And then you work on that. And that's how I do it.
I think I have one other thing that I'm thinking about. So with Riley, when they were playing together, or say that Ashton comes back in from the bathroom, like Riley always like goes at her. Like it looks like she's trying to play bite and provoke play with her. But she always has like an open mouth where she's like biting at her, but not, I mean, she's not hurting her at that point, but that's like anytime they're playing, anytime she comes back in and like there, that energy is there. So is that something completely different than.
Yeah, it's, that's more stalking prey play, where if a dog is outside and then another dog comes in, they'll just kind of stalk them. And then when they come in, they pounce on them and put their, they'll just kind of like play with them and roughhouse them. And that's typically just a stimulant, like, hey, you're back, let's play. And that's typically what that is.
But I didn't know, like, we don't want that to lead into more of the biting, or if that could have been an issue where.
Right. It's all predicated off of how the other dog perceives it. Like, so for an example, my blockhead Burly Mastiff, he'll come in first with me because he's on leash and Lakota's off leash, and he'll just wait for her to come in. And she's like, I don't really feel like stiff arming this gigantic linebacker to get into my home, right? So I'll body block him. So I'll literally just stand next to him and I'll say, okay, come on, Coda, you're good to go in. Cause that's what he wants to do, is like, as soon as she comes in, he just wants to pounce on her and try to play, and she doesn't want anything to do with it. So yeah.
Ashton was fairly submissive, aside from she has definitely picked a lot of traits up from, Riley.
Mm-hmm.
As Riley's come into the house, like I said, the barking and things like that, she's become a little more aggressive in certain areas. I think because she feels that she has to now. Okay. Well, I guess we don't have anything else. All right. So thank you for your time.
Yeah, absolutely. It's nice to meet you guys. Your home looks lovely. I love all the wood beams.
Thank you. Yes, we have lots of, it was a farmhouse, so.
I love it.
We did. But besides the wood floors, which are not to dog nails.
Yeah. Do you guys have a wood stove?
We have a pellet stove. Cool. A wood stove. I didn't have a whole lot of room for that because it has to be out away from, or the wall behind it. So I will say that with our winters here, pellet stoves are not cutting it.
Mm-hmm.
It is what it is, but we will keep it for backup. At some point. But nice ambiance with the lighting in it. But
yeah. Yeah, no, it's cool. I like the vibe. It's very cool.
So,
all right, guys. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you. Thank you very much, Tom.
You're welcome. Have a good day.
You too.
All right, thank you. Bye.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.